This is broadcast number 665. It's September the 3rd, 1984. 1 year ago, just at this time, the Korean Airline went down, September the 1st. That caused a year of investigations, of accusations, a lot of accusations, and a lot of reports and articles, toning down of the United States to the point where a year later we stated the Soviet Union probably thought it was a spy plane, that they didn't intentionally shoot down a civilian plane, but had reason to think it was a spy plane. I talked to Larry Flint yesterday on the telephone in Los Angeles. He was the first person who questioned the United States on that. He paid $23,000 for a full-page ad in the Los Angeles Times. He compared this to the Gulf of Tonkin, a clear-cut provocation, and asked people to tone down their feelings about the situation until all the truths could be told. That's the point at which I contacted him, because I felt that Larry McDonald had worked with this Mr. Franklin, who had killed a lot of Jews and blacks, and he also was involved in the shooting of Larry Flint, which he later admitted this year in this past interim that he was involved in the paralyzing of Larry Flint. And I wanted to do a story on Larry McDonald from Georgia, the representative from Georgia, and his links not only to the Korean Airline when he was killed, but to the lawsuit taking place with the Los Angeles Police Department. And that's how I happened to write the article for Hustler, and Larry Flint put his name on it, on the Korean Airline. Last year, 5 days after the plane went down, I said there were three alternatives. Either the Soviet Union knew it was commercial, didn't care, or they thought it was a spy plane and gave ample warning, or it was a planned provocation by U.S. intelligence. And I believe that the latter was the most, there was more reason to believe the latter, and I gave nine reasons why the planned provocation, if it was that, and one of them, of course, was breaking up the possible détente taking place between our allies and buying gas from the Soviet Union, oil and gas from the Soviet Union. Recently, there were some new articles, one in Nation magazine. I'll give the address on the reprint that comes with this tape, where to order them. A marvelous story on the Korean Airline by David Pearson. He's getting a doctor's degree from Yale, and it's about the U.S., what they knew and what we knew. It's a very technical article. It doesn't go into the politics of Larry McDonald. It goes into how the plane went down and how it was a provocation and how it did break up détente and peace conversations that would take place, going back to the Gary Powers incident, for what it has to offer. It's a very good, clear-cut story, and there are reprints of that, or you can go to the library and copy it or read it. Also, the Los Angeles Times this past week has a long item. The Soviets take a harsher line on the Korean jetliner and accuse Reagan of sending 269 passengers and the crew to their death. Also, a story in the Los Angeles Herald that says the United States says the Soviets still pay for the high price of the drowning, that worldwide criticism strengthened Ronald Reagan. And, of course, that's what he needed. And a gentleman who works in our State Department, I've mentioned before, says that he believes that the United States had a provocation, that the CIA or some element of the United States government had it blown up so that it wouldn't reveal the spy secrets. And we've talked about that before. So I was giving the reasons why and also the diversionaries at that time. I went into detail on nine diversionaries that were in the news, and each of them 1 year later is still unsolved, still connected to the people involved with the Korean Airline provocation, and these things will go on for many years. One item I brought up was the suit by the American Civil Liberties Union against the Los Angeles Police Department. That case was solved. It was thrown out. The LAPD settled for almost $2 million and didn't want to go to trial when it was linked to Larry McDonald and the Defense Department, John Singh, Admiral Moore, and so forth. I listed those various people from Western Goals. Licio Gelli's interconnecting links have been hidden. He left the Swiss prison, never has been seen. The Klaus Barbie case hasn't gone to trial. Mark Rich was served the wrong papers in Switzerland, hasn't been sent back to the United States for a trial. His papers arrived subpoena in English instead of French or German over there. John DeLorean got off of one case easily because various reasons that we've gone into and some more I'll mention, but not his banking connections that are still the big story. The Banco Ambrosiano case settled for several hundred million so that the links of the Vatican to these interconnecting, gun-running, dope narcotics, mafia, Odessa connections wouldn't become more in focus. They're still blurry. Henry Arsan, I mentioned that investigation of Milan, and Steve Baum and his organization of drugs, weapons, the Vatican, and the links to Mr. Aja, the fellow who took the shot at John Paul II. Arsan died this past year in jail. I haven't even had a chance to bring that up. I have a lot of material to share with you on that. In the interim, he's dead. Henry Jackson died the same day as Larry McDonald. Henry Kissinger's buddy, Alexander Haig, is on the board of Boeing, taking over for Jackson. I'll do more on Haig. The Nugenhan Bank is still in the air. The murder, the mafia, the missing money, the admirals in general. So that all these nine areas that I talk about very often and show the interconnecting links of them to each other are still dangling, unanswered. And the bottom line, of course, of all this is known as the Odessa, the network of Nazis after the Fourth Reich, where they are, how they're using their money, and how they're ready to resurface. And once Reagan has what he calls his Christian country, you'll see more quickly how these areas have used their money and are using it for this election to get their president in elected, and then they can take over. Ronald Reagan, of course, is just the front for them, but that's what will happen. And then I asked the question, 5 days after the accident, how would a provocation take place? And I listed 11 ways, and if you're interested, look up the sheet, compare it to the news now, and see how close and on target I was. And I was up in Canada. I remember Vancouver the day that Larry McDonald went down and took the Greyhound bus, never taken it, but I refused to give them $450 to fly from Monterey up to Vancouver and back. So I was on the Greyhound coming back September the 2nd, and within 3 days I had figured out pretty well my information stands firm, and a year later, with the best kinds of people investigating it, it's very solid, and I had put together this amount of information within 3 days, and a day and a half was riding that bus. If many of you have that large calendar, that 1948 calendar that came out the first of the year, September the 3rd, that's just an anniversary of this same time, 13 years ago, G. Gordon Liddy, E. Howard Hunt had directed the anti-Castro Cubans to going into Dr. Lewis Fielding's offices on Bedford Drive in Beverly Hills. They wanted to get the conversations of Daniel Ellsberg with a psychiatrist. Shortly after that time, Elmer Davis came to my home. He got out of Folsom Prison. He was the fellow who had already served 3 years in jail. The Beverly Hills police had charged him with burglarizing the office. He never knew the doctor. He never knew the offices. And was sitting up at Folsom, taxpayers putting up about $10,000 a year for these kind of prisoners. He heard about my work. I helped him get out and helped him with the lawsuit of Davis versus Nixon and Ehrlichman and Liddy and Hunt. It was a clear-cut case through over $3 million lawsuit. And, of course, it never went to trial. He was beat up. He was drugged. I went down with him once to L.A. and went to court, and he did really well. And then 12 hours later, he showed up. Well, he went to see attorney Leonard Weinglass, and who later had represented Emily Harris. Yeah, that was later with the SLA case, a few years later. And no more comments about Weinglass. I have my own opinions. But between his office and where Elmer was to meet me, he arrived with broken ribs and bones and smashed head. And every time he went to L.A., he was given alcohol or drugs and was so spaced out. The suit just dropped. And at one point, he was at the house here. I thought he could only conduct it from there. He shouldn't commute back and forth. But I tried to get some kind of a safe place that he could stay. And I was talking to his parole officer, and he smashed my head and stomped on my head, and I almost got killed. He was so angry, the idea of his moving down there, but I didn't think he should be here. And we'd been in San Francisco 3 weeks earlier to visit Popeye Jackson of the United Prisoners Union. He was out of prison, and I felt that Popeye was in danger and that we were in danger, and I told Elmer he had to get out. Finally, he went to L.A. I didn't press charges for the assault, or I would have him in back in Folsom for a long time, and I really thought he was going to kill me. The parole officer had been on the phone, and I got help right away. The police were there. But anyway, Popeye Jackson was killed 3 weeks later, and the whole thing just blew up. The case of Elmer Davis, he never got any settlement, any award, and they all brag about later how they went in the offices. But the question of how you take a black man, pick him up in Beverly Hills, police, create a charge, send him to prison, and the White House planned it, and they make no efforts to apologize or to say, I'm sorry to that person who was victimized. You can see why I'm so skeptical of many of the things I read and pursue them further, because I can't take it face value, a lot of these stories, and many of them I've had personal experiences with, which makes it even more horrendous. One quick item before I get on to many others I hope I have time for. Jack Anderson has a newsletter. I don't know if you know it. Again, I'll put the address on the printed sheet that goes with this tape. This current one has several items that were of interest to me. One has to do with the investigation of General Dynamics. You know, there were millions of dollars of overpayment and graft, and the investigation is currently going on. And one has to do with Mr. Takis Veliotis, V-E-L-I-O-T-E-S-T-I-S. He lives in Greece, and he got over $1 million in kickbacks from the subcontractor for the General Dynamics. But his son is hiding over there because they told him if he testified on General Dynamics, his son would be killed. I bring this up because of the death threats to my son and why I went off the air at this particular time, the telephone calls he got. General Dynamics is important always because it goes back to the John Kennedy assassination and the various agents that are used out of Lockheed or General Dynamics or Bell Helicopter for spying, and they're tied up to other scandals that come later, like Steve Bauman, the Mafia, the Nazi, the Odessa Network. These huge contractors for the major corporations siphon off millions, and the millions, I believe, then go to the spying agents in the Odessa. Max and Gally Clark were close friends of the Oswalds. Max Clark worked as chief of security for General Dynamics. Albert Jenner, the attorney for General Dynamics, was the attorney on the Warren Commission that covered up some of the major testimony that would prove a conspiracy. And Henry Crown, of course, is a large stockholder in General Dynamics, one of the big men behind it. And his son-in-law, David Shine, owns the Ambassador Hotel where Robert Kennedy was killed. David Shine and Roy Cohn were close buddies with Senator Joe McCarthy, these young punks looking for communists. And, of course, Roy Cohn, Shine's partner, is on Western Goals, who helped put the $100,000 computer to the Los Angeles Police Department. These names appear and reappear in various forms, but General Dynamics was in the news quite a bit this last year with those overcharges, and I mentioned it because of Mr. Veliotis and the death threats on his son. Also in this newsletter, the question comes about who's running Middle East policy, and Jack Anderson says that his State Department isn't doing it, that the professionals are shut out, that only George Shultz from Bechtel and Henry Kissinger run it through Peter Rodman, R-O-D-M-A-N, from the State's Policy Planning Council. He's a protege of Kissinger. I go back to what happened in Furth, Germany, and the Kissinger family. I don't believe that all of our Middle East policy is made up by a Jew. I don't believe that the Jordanian family would allow it, or the Jamals would allow it, or the Saudi family, or in Egypt, or Kuwait, or any of the Muslim countries, that a Jew would make all American Middle East policy as he had done for years. The Jewish cover is, I believe, only a cover, and his history in Furth, Germany, has much more to explain because of the behavior of the Muslim world and the oil, multi-millionaires, the energy of the United States in the hands of Jew Kissinger. I just don't believe it, but I think it's a good cover. As I said, get your articles on the KAL. They're important. Now, just today, Klaus Barbie's name came up in the news in conjunction with William French Smith because a new book is coming out by Alan Ryan. Remember, he's the fellow from the Justice Department Office of Special Investigation. Ryan's the fellow that tried to cover up originally the link of Klaus Barbie to the Central Intelligence Agency. Prosecuting Nazi War Criminals in America by Harcourt, Brace, and Jovanovich. And William French Smith said to him, it'd be a bad decision to look into the investigation of the Nazis. Smith said that it wasn't important enough, Klaus Barbie and the CIA. He described Smith's attitude that if Congress or the press wanted an investigation, they could do it themselves. Well, Congress did an investigation. No, it wasn't the Congress. They did the Korea Gate, and they did the Senate Watergate. They did very bad investigations and hardly any prosecutions, a slap on the wrist. And what can the press do? I consider myself a journalist or the press. After you investigate it, then what? Well, the main question is, why is William French Smith making an effort to conceal, until he was threatened, the links of Nazi Klaus Barbie to the Central Intelligence Agency? I believe they're covering up the links that eventually would go to John DeLorean and General Motors and the cocaine in Hollywood and the cocaine in New York. That's what he's covering up. were his friend Ronald Reagan and William Casey and Paul X. Salt. Drug prosecutions. He has to stay away from Barbie and the CIA because it links to DeLorean and to the United States Drug Enforcement Agency that has worked along with DeLorean. And this has been the Ronald Reagan, Paul Axald, Richard Nixon, William Casey, Robert Vesco, all of them are tied together. So this new book is coming out. And, in fact, Jack Anderson says that on March 27th, 1951, documents existed to show that two Army intelligence agents from the United States escorted Barbie to Genoa. We know that, gave him false papers under Altman, and that the charges were true that Barbie was Army intelligence operative after the war. I guess it took Mr. Ryan a little while to get these documents, but he finally got 3 inches thick, called Mark Secret, and he got documents on that. Now, there's one book out by Brendan Murphy called The Butcher of Lyon, the story of infamous Nazi Klaus Barbie. I'll be doing more on this later. I haven't done much, but there are various quotations from this book that have a lot to do with what I've been trying to explain about John DeLorean recently and his connections to the cocaine. In this one book, it tells how Barbie was assigned to the SD office in Holland. That's the Gestapo intelligence office in Holland. And I have a lot of information I'm not going to use this evening, but I will be using it on the Prince Bernhard and the Holland connections of Klaus Barbie in Amsterdam and his work there. And he is in the Amsterdam branch office. His job was to make sure that the anti-Nazi tendencies stayed out of science, education, religion, sports, or entertainment. Now, that's why there are so many deaths. You see various sports people or actors or writers and scientists, and you wonder, well, why did he die? Why should he die? And you investigate what they were doing, and they were questioning certain things that are happening now. And Barbie's role then and up to the time he was arrested was to watch things like sports and religion. And this book has various references to murders of people and newspaper people about to catch on to Klaus Barbie. Also, this particular book tells about Barbie's work with CIC, that was the United States Intelligence Group, and he passes it off in a very cavalier manner, this Mr. Brendan Murphy, and tells not only working for the United States government as soon as the war was over, but one of his jobs was to establish a long-range penetration of French intelligence installations in the French zone, starting by the autumn of 1947. Last week or so, I mentioned on the air from that book, Della Chiaia, how the Italian government in 1948, with the help of the CIA, it had just been formed in 47, really escalated the intelligence work and patterned themselves after the French cells. And I made a point of saying that Barbie worked for Americans in making up the investigation of the French resistance and getting them tried as traitors, the people who opposed the Nazis after the war went to jail. And this is one more reference of the CIC, the American Intelligence Group, going to France and using Nazis, just as they did, identical in Italy and Holland and then in the United States, and to use them to stop all investigations of anti-Nazis. This is after the war, not during the war, but after the war. Incidentally, the DeLorean case you may have seen, or maybe you didn't, because it wasn't wire services. And this goes back to the Barbie story. Long story in the LA Times this week, the United States concedes their error in the DeLorean case. And it tells how the United States government failed to prosecute him very nicely. They asked him for a promissory note instead of cash on the deposit for the cocaine. If they had the cocaine, they would have had him. And also, another story, DeLorean jury selected with expert help. And it tells how a woman came in from Houston, Texas, and handpicked the jury that later acquitted DeLorean on all 8 charges. And one of the people she used, the defense attorney, and this woman, Kathy Bennett, was a former California Highway Patrol officer, William Lair, 57 years old, of Playa del Rey. And she used him as a person important in the jury to try DeLorean. Well, goodness knows where he came from or how many stints in Vietnam or whether these Los Angeles policemen, with many of them with links to military and to frogmen and all kinds. I've done bios of some of them, some brief bios. Goodness knows who this guy was, but it was very important that somebody steer them away and use the case that he was entrapped by the government, even though they got letters from Congressman Edwards, which I mentioned several weeks ago. It was in July. Congressman Edwards wrote about entrapment in the government and how bad it is. And those letters went to every member of the jury, and then the articles came out that this is what they took an interpretation from a congressman. Don't convict Barbie. You use your judgment. It was entrapment because a congressman said this kind of behavior is not good. So the question of how they got the home addresses of each member of the jury, we don't know. But certainly this woman who came from Houston, Texas, would know. And it's very important to find out how many of those other jurors had positions similar to his. Remember when Dan White was tried, they had somebody from Bechtel, one from the military, one a post office clerk, federal government, and used a very good jury selection that assured that Dan White would get off. New York Times had a story, group would oust DeLorean as head of the Utah company. They're trying to sever him from that snowmobile machine because, again, the funds, the $7 million funds that I was told came from there, went to this Swiss account of that belongs to Joseph Mengele from Barbie for the Odessa Network. Now, the New York Times story is August 27th. The main issue is the $17 million out of one account, this DeLorean motor, and also the company in Utah. The interesting thing about the New York Times story, it says the creditors gave the reason why they wanted DeLorean severed from the Logan Manufacturing Company is that Cynthia Lee Brady, his personal secretary, was arrested on cocaine traffic charges, and she's an officer of the corporation that holds Logan. That the creditors contend that Ms. Brady's considerable responsibility in the administration of Logan and the notoriety surrounding DeLorean's recent trial on cocaine traffic, that he should be separated from the manufacturing of equipment for grooming the ski slopes. Ms. Brady was arrested with three other people in Clinton Township, New Jersey, when DeLorean was on trial. The group, there's 600 creditors in Britain that want a total of $100 million from DeLorean. The Utah company has been valued in bankruptcy actions of $9 million, estimated $9 to $10 million, and the chief issue is another $17 million, and I have to keep repeating those for you. One of the papers attached to the creditor's motion dated May 30th, signed by DeLorean, is president of DeLorean Motor Company, controlled by DeLorean. He's the sole shareholder of Logan Manufacturing, but the company identifies Ms. Brady as the assistant secretary, assistant treasurer of DeLorean Manufacturing. The only other officer being Christina DeLorean, Miss Brady, DeLorean's 30-year-old personal secretary of his estate at Bedminster, New Jersey, was arrested with the seizure of a little half ounce of cocaine and 25 grams of marijuana. She was released on bail, and the British government have spoken with Miss Brady and have contacted through DeLorean's estate there. She had the cocaine and was arrested, but they want her removed from the Logan Manufacturing Company and the clients of Great Britain and the motor company want $100 million. So the Utah company has this very important person who's worked 30 years with DeLorean caught with cocaine, and that story will develop. The British money missing, the Swiss money, the Panamanian, and the Utah. Again, I want to keep stirring that up and remind you of it. Now, in the other book on Klaus Barbie, I'm reading two of them at the same time, trying to go through those, as well as the book on Della Chaye, The Butcher of Lyon by Tom Bauer. He has several references here that I want to bring out just apropos to the DeLorean case right now. He tells about Klaus Barbie was in Bolivia in early November, and in 1982, this is just prior to the arrest, this is November of 82, Klaus Barbie made a trip, and they thought he went over to Paraguay to visit Joseph Mengele. This is on page 17 of Bauer's book, Klaus Barbie, The Butcher of Lyon, that he went to visit early November Joseph Mengele. Then they said that he came back to Bolivia, his wife was sick, and he went back to Bolivia after he saw Mengele. And I've said before, Mr. Fritz Steinacker, Steinacker, from Germany and Austria, is the attorney for Joseph Mengele, and he flew from Germany to Zurich, Switzerland, to receive the $20 million, which would be from the DeLorean Motor, $7 million from Utah, that was given to him and put in a bank in Zurich that Barbie gave to Mengele's to put in Europe. And this book says that he was at Paraguay early in November. That would be prior to the dates. The deposit dates were November 13th to 15th, the trip to Zurich, Switzerland, done by the head of Associated Press Photos. His home, this press man, is at Chatham, Massachusetts, C-H-A-T-A-M, Massachusetts, and that he's the courier for Mengele, so Barbie took the money. Also, this book on the Butcher of Leon tells that cocaine is grown in Bolivia, and then it's processed in Colombia, just like it's grown in Southeast Asia and the Middle East and was processed in Marseille. So if you see cocaine comes from Colombia, it didn't mean that it didn't come from Bolivia. Also, in Bauer's book on Klaus Barbie, it tells about his visiting to Lima, Peru, and moving there for a while with Fritz Schwend from the SS, a colonel in the Gestapo, part of Operation Bernhard. I've done many broadcasts on Bernhard, not enough. And in the next week or two, I'm going to detail the pretrial deposition of Klaus Barbie with Prince Bernhard. This is called Operation Bernhard, with actual Prince Bernhard and his years in Holland, his several years with the Gestapo, who moved from Berlin to Amsterdam before Klaus Barbie went on to France with the Gestapo. So he was close to Schwinn, but the links here to the CIA intelligence are very thick, and Prince Bernhard then went on. Bilderberger Group was formed by a man who was knighted by the Vatican, and Bernhard has the annual meeting of the top leaders of the world, which is the Odessa planners, and links to Klaus Barbie and Joseph Mengele and Martin Bormann, of course, in South America. Bauer talks about the CIC in 1947 when Klaus Barbie went to work for United States intelligence with a man named Robert Taylor. And then he very nicely passes it off. He says Taylor had been a typical CIC career. After fighting with the 84th Infantry Division in the Battle of the Bulge, that's that famous area where Otto Skorzeny and all of them were and Henry Kissinger, he was drafted into the CIC because he spoke German. This is like Henry Kissinger. He never received special training at the headquarters at Fort Holabird, but he went on with a detachment, traveling at the front of the American advance across the Rhine up to the Elbe. Taylor, like many of the other CIC officers, felt he was part of an elite force. It could count Henry Kissinger and J.D. Salinger among the ranks. He throws in the Salinger, but Henry Kissinger was there with him, with Klaus Barbie. And again, this book on there are two books on Barbie and one on Delacaille that I'm intermingling the information of the three and the relationship of them to Klaus Barbie and the CIA and to Henry Kissinger and the Hollywood cocaine connections. In fact, in Bauer's book, he mentions on page 213 the making of cocaine down in Bolivia, and he says, until fashionable New York and Hollywood socialites discovered the use of cocaine as a stimulant in 1977, most of Bolivia's cocoa crop was used legally in Bolivia, payment for wages for peasants and workers who chewed the leaf, but essential to their normal day life. The remainder of the crop was illegally exported to Colombia, converted into laboratories, into paste and white powder, and the potential of the American demand was recognized by Mr. Suarez, who began the smuggling, of course, with RCIA, with Klaus Barbie, and so forth. And it became no less than a $400 million a year business by 1982. And then down there arrived Joachim Fiebelkorn, F-I-E-B-E-L-K-O-R-N, with the Nazi uniforms to glorify the Third Reich, to start the Fourth Reich with Mr. Stefano Delacaille, with his links, Delacaille, with Otto Skorzeny, with Alan Dulles, with Mr. Donovan of the OSS. The American team that worked under so-called intelligence were immediately after the war setting up the Fourth Reich, and now the uniforms are arriving. Can you imagine when Reagan is reelected and this team, they can make $400 million a year in cocaine in 1982. Multiply the weapons, the narcotics, the intent, and the Odessa, and the silence of the American Attorney General with the drug dealers, with the Nazis and the uniforms, and their role with the characters in Hollywood and New York. And you have a story that will never end, that will always be opening up and is described in these various books. I'll do more on the book Andelikai next week in the role of Otto Skorzeny, with the Odessa, with Alan Dulles, with Richard Helms. Our CIA was nothing but a front, as I say, for Nazis, for drugs, for the Fourth Reich. Every time I pick up a book today, I see more and more that confirms what I figured out about 15 years ago and have been studying ever since. We'll turn over the tape now, take a one-second break for you to turn this over. You don't have to take 1 minute because it's not on the air right now. But if you put on the air later, take your 1 minute and we'll go back to some other news and recent appointments of Ronald Reagan's.